WTMC.com.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 1 to 3.
General John Jumper was Air Force Chief of Staff from 2001 to 2005.
You've seen Secretary Gates advocate for more resources to the State Department and other agencies to be able to form sort of deployable forces to deal with these transitions when the time is right. And I think he's done a lot to improve that.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with our favorite Uncle Sam. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you can find him at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Larry, welcome back.
Mark, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we always have interesting things when you're here because you know a lot of interesting stuff.
Interesting, hopefully, to the listeners.
Yeah, okay, well, hopefully so. You know, the last time I believe you were here, you had just started Allen Federal. So tell us what you've been up to. But first, tell us what Allen Federal does for this community.
Well, Mark, what Allen Federal does is it provides strategic business consulting services. The bottom line of what we do is we make our government clients' business better. So I'm working right now with large and small companies in different parts of the federal space, a lot of it in IT, trying to find ways to improve their business, whether it's identifying an emerging contracting opportunity at a major agency or, more frequently now, business-to-business relationship development. We can provide a full range of services. One of the things we've also done lately is proposal review from the standpoint of how is this going to play not just with the contracting officer but with the program manager and any of the politicals that might look at a company's major proposal. Those are valuable services to have, and a little bit up front, as usual, can save you a lot in the long run. It's been a lot of fun the first 3 months running this company.
I bet. You know, and you were with the coalition for about 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah, and, you know, they're chugging along too, so kudos to them, kudos to you. I'm always happy to have you on the show. Now, the reason you're back, somewhat sooner than a lot of my guests, aside from the depth of knowledge you bring to the table, is you shot me a note couple weeks back now, and we just haven't been able to get together. But you had a meeting with GSA, with Jeff Kosis, and fill us in on what they're up to over there. I mean, it's a schedule-related issue, right?
It is, Mark, and Jeff Kosis has ownership now of all of the non-IT GSA schedules. And he's doing some interesting things that I thought were worthy to relate to the broader community. What they're trying to do generally is make the schedules program more nimble by adding electronic tools to program and contract management. They're trying to ensure that the schedules themselves relate more closely to customer needs, i.e. they're more visible if a customer has a need and they're not sure that a schedule with a crazy acronym can meet their requirement. Maybe GSA is looking at reconstituting what that acronym means so that it's more obvious that they have the support system in place that the customer is looking for. They're also looking to make sure that they properly manage their workload. These are the schedules, Mark, that are growing by an average of 7% a year over the last 2 years, while the IT schedule itself remains relatively flat, although pretty big at $17 billion.
Yeah, it's roughly 48-49% of the entire GSA schedule spend.
That's right. These are the schedules particularly in the services arena, that are growing and need some proper management.
Which schedules in particular, do you know?
Well, we're talking primarily here about the MOBIS schedule, Management Organization Business Services, the Professional Engineering Services schedule, Logistics schedule, but we're also talking about contracts for things like copiers, multifunction devices. We're talking about office supplies and furniture. So Jeff has a pretty extensive portfolio. He has all of the service offerings, and he has all of the product offerings that you can find through the schedules program.
I have an aside question here. It's going to take us off track for a moment, but you mentioned the office supplies schedule. Was he involved in the strategic sourcing BPA?
Yes, he was.
Okay. Now, it had one. I'm not going to get into depth here, but it had one provision that really, really caught my attention. And it was the first time, I believe, that GSA has required level 3 processing on a BPA.
That's right. And it was something that not just GSA felt was important to have, but the customer agencies that GSA is trying to get to use this contract said that they needed to have. Just recently, Mark, I think the fact that they have level 3 on that strategic sourcing initiative was a major factor in the Department of Veterans Affairs deciding to go over and use this GSA contract rather than continue to use their own contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't get the level three processing offers the buyer a granularity when they get their monthly forms. It also offers a lot more security on the purchase, and for the vendor, it usually saves them processing fees because it is more secure. There's less likelihood of fraud.
That's right. It's a good deal for the vendor, even though it requires some upfront work and investment over time. The per transaction fee for those vendors is significantly reduced, and so it's a good deal for everybody.
Yeah, and last time I talked to David Shea, who's the Smart Pay manager, David, he would not commit, but he indicated there was certainly a growing interest in level 3, so I'm assuming when Smart Pay 3 rolls out in, 5 years now, it'll be a requirement.
I would not be at all surprised to see that it's a requirement, Mark. It's undeniable that the trend in the government market, as it is in some places commercially, is to obtain level 3 data. Particularly if you're a central procurement agency like GSA, you're looking to add that value add proposition to your customer, being able to say, hey, buy for me, and you get the granularity, you get to identify instantly where your spend is going. That's an important selling point.
Right. It is, and it it would take care of any congressional issues on so many credit cards being used in the government. And just to finish this part of the conversation, the amount of fraud on the SmartPay program since its inception in '89 has been really, really tiny.
Tiny and very small indeed when compared to programs of comparable size in the commercial market. Now, of course, no one ever likes to have fraud in any government program, but when you look at the purchase card program federally against large commercial programs, the amount of fraud in the federal program is enviably small.
Yeah.
So it's been a very good program indeed.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that you and I have both been proponents of the credit card program since the inception.
Absolutely.
Huge thing. So let's see if we can get back on track now. what's Jeff doing here?
Well, one of the things he's doing is he's putting into place electronic end-to-end contract management services.
Electronic. Okay.
And that's going to be a phased program. Right now, what they're concentrating on is implementing electronic offers and electronic modifications. So if you're a new contractor coming in, you're going to submit your offer electronically. If you're an existing contractor, you need to modify your contract. That's going to be done electronically, and it's going to be reviewed electronically by the contracting officer, ideally, and then approved or modified accordingly on an electronic system by the contracting officer. GSA looks right now, Mark, at that 96% of their routine offers and mods are being done through the e-offer or e-mod system. about the only thing that is not yet in that system that's still paper-based is the novation and name change process if you or have been bought by somebody and somebody else is taking over your contract. But the general idea is to have a standard product solicitation where the standard terms and conditions cover 90 to 95% of everything you're doing, and similarly in contracts for services about 95%, so that when you are doing a GSA proposal, only a small amount of it is going to be specific to whatever schedule it is you're obtaining, whether it's a management organizational business improvement services schedule, a logistics schedule, a PES schedule, an environmental schedule, what have you. Most of it would be standardized, and of course that allows it to go through the electronic systems easier.
Okay. Give me a rough time frame on. Oh, actually, let's go to the time frame after the break. My guest is Larry Allen. Larry's president of Allen Federal Business Partners. When we come back, we'll get into the time frame for the rollout on the GSA program. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. After childbirth, many mothers experience emotional changes that can include depression.
Each year in the United States, there's approximately 500,000 women who are at risk for developing postpartum depression.
Dr. Peter Schmidt is with the National Institute of Mental Health. He says an estimated 13% of new mothers experience the persistent, sad, or anxious emotions known as postpartum depression.
So clearly this is an important condition to the public health of this country. These are prevalent conditions and associated with considerable morbidity.
New research is focusing on hormone treatment for postpartum depression. For details, visit www.nimh.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even change my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm Honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 67 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Hey, Cats fans, place a deposit for full season tickets now and reserve your spot for the 2011-2012 season. Deposits are fully refundable and can be used towards other ticket purchases while retaining your place in line for full season plans next season. For more info on placing your full season ticket deposit, call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In-Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In-Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government. Talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In-Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In-Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. Larry is probably one of the best-known experts on all things GSA schedule. So let's get into the nitty-gritty here on how much time is this going to save the vendors, and how does it free up resources for GSA?
Well, that's the intent of all these programs. Right now, you have the first phase, Mark, in place, which I mentioned earlier, e-offers and e-mods. What's coming is a throughput electronic acquisition system, things like automatic updates to GSA Advantage, being able to really have end-to-end acquisition management electronically. And the idea is that this will reduce the time frame to get a contract awarded, to get a contract modified. Jeff Kosis, who runs all these contracts, is looking for ways to reduce all of the time frames. Right now, he says they've got a 13-day modification turnaround average. Technically, it's 12.9, but that sounds like 13 to me.
Is that an accurate assessment, do you think?
I think sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. You know, GSA okay, so contracting average. Officers still okay. Can take a while. And their objective now is, when you're modifying a contract, extending a contract, to have that new extension in place 30 days in advance of the expiration of the existing contract. Jeff would like to take it up to 60 days in advance. So clearly this is being done. Electronic contracting is being done with better management in mind. If you're a contractor, it means that you don't have to do separate things like GSA Advantage uploads after your new price list is approved. That would happen under this system automatically. So it would free up time for you, but it also frees up time for GSA. Another thing that they're doing, Mark, in this arena is that they are creating different regions throughout the country that will do different types of contracts. And IT contracting, not really Jeff's ken, but nevertheless, it's part of the schedules program. You know, we now have an IT contracting center here in Arlington. There's been one in Kansas City for a number of years. Last year, GSA opened an IT contracting center in Fort Worth. This year, they're going to have one in Atlanta. That's a trend that I see where you're beginning to say, look, we've got resources in the Federal Acquisition Service organization. How do we make the best use of those resources? Not anyone gets to own IT. Not anyone gets to own MOBIS. In fact, MOBIS work is being farmed to Kansas City as well because they don't have enough people to get that done in a timely manner. So one of the things that Jeff is doing here in terms of electronic contracting and standardization is in creating the flexibility and the ability to use a GSA resource to get timely contracting actions completed wherever in the country they have capacity to do that.
Okay, cool. So give me an overall rollout time frame for this. When can the contracting community expect to see some results that benefit them?
Well, I think right now the initial benefits are being felt already. Modification times are down for routine modifications. If it's thorny, that's another issue. For the rest of this system, I think it's probably going to be 18 months to 2 years before you can see everything being integrated across the board. And it's not just the time it takes to implement the IT part of the solution, Mark. As you know, at least as large a part, if not larger, is going to be the training and familiarity that the GSA folks have with this, who are going to be actually using these e-tools. Right now, that's a little bit better than what it used to be, but it still has a ways to go.
Okay. Now, are they going to be deploying any of the things that they sell? You know, this seems to me a perfect platform to teach their staff via archive webinar.
Well, I think that's, you know, there are different training tools that you can use to get your people up and running.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they are looking as this is going to be a requirement for contracting officers to use these systems in terms of their own professional advancement. If you want to work on great contracts, if you want to work on the big stuff that's really interesting and time sensitive, you're going to be able to use these. Otherwise, you may find that you're working on other things that maybe don't get the time and attention and glamour that other things do.
Okay, cool. So anything else we need to know about this this thing right now?
The only other thing I would say on this front, Mark, is that, you know, the IT side of GSA should be coming along and following these issues, too. And I'm certainly hopeful that Pat Waddell and her team over in the IT arena and Mary Davey, the assistant commissioner, are working with Jeff very closely on this type of stuff because, you know, the IT program is so large, it would really be great if they could mirror these practices, too.
Yeah, I mean, the IT program is roughly half the vendors on the total schedules and roughly half the dollars.
So, roughly half the dollars in a very high-profile part of the program. It would be nice to have them all in the same tent.
Yeah, I mean, we read and hear about the IT side all the time, but you don't hear about, you know, Office Depot or, you know, Herman Miller. You know, it just, you know, you drive by it, but you don't hear Office Depot's big in this market. Herman Miller's big in, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you were the president of the coalition. You know who's big on schedules. And we don't hear about most of them.
No.
Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
My unit needs to be able to transmit critical information quickly and reliably while deployed. We must have the flexibility to deploy mobile forces fast as we adapt to changing conditions in our environment. Only satellite can support real-time communications everywhere in the field, whether in the air, on the ground, or at sea.
Hughes provides advanced communications on the move solutions with global coverage. Our solutions meet U.S. government security requirements, including FIPS and TRANSEC, and operate on multiple bands and waveforms. Hughes products comply with open commercial standards, enabling easy integration with existing systems. Our team of highly skilled and cleared engineers stands ready to work with you to meet your mission requirements.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Walk the dog. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. People who walk a dog don't just walk the dog, of course, they walk themselves, too. And a researcher at Michigan State University says both benefit. Matthew Reeves looked at Michigan data from a survey coordinated by HHS's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He says dog walkers got more activity than dog owners who did not walk them, and that walkers got more activity in general, not just from walking. Reeves doesn't think much of sit for people or pets.
There's a lot of unwalked dogs. 40% of dogs don't get walked at all, and the ones that do get walked are only getting walked 3 times a week. So try and get the dog out every day. Good for you, good for the animal.
The study is in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Profile America, Monday, March 28th. This month has been set aside to recognize a number of various causes. Two of these seem to go hand in hand, National Nutrition Month and National Frozen Food Month. The goal of the first is to make consumers aware of just how easy it is to eat healthy meals. And one of the ways this is possible is because of frozen food. The first commercially available frozen food was packaged fish in 1925. Frozen food became increasingly popular after World War II as refrigerated trains and trucks were able to carry it to all parts of the nation. Now, every refrigerator has a fairly ample freezer, and the complimentary appliance, a microwave oven, is in more than 9 out of 10 homes. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Hispanics with arthritis. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. The first deep look at how common arthritis is among Hispanics finds the disease affects the lives of millions. Researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention analyzed national survey data. The report documented the toll that arthritis can take on lives. For instance, almost 1.4 million Hispanics said the disease limits their ability to be active, and about 1.2 million said they had severe pain. Researcher Louise Murphy says people can act to prevent or control arthritis.
If you're overweight or obese, losing weight can reduce your risk of getting osteoarthritis. If you already have arthritis, you can engage in low-impact exercise such as walking.
The study is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find him at allenfederal.com. Larry, I saw on one of my LinkedIn groups, Peter Weischer's group, posting in the group, it linked to an article by this guy that I know, Larry Allen. And are you doing a regular gig now for Washington Business Journal?
I am. I'm doing a column a month for them right now. It may go up to two, but it's a lot of fun to be able to have a platform to wax poetically on government contract matters.
Yeah, and Lord knows you have enough information to share, but beware what you ask for. Once a month is pretty easy. I do it with WashTech. More than once a month, it starts to become a job.
Right.
So. But it's cool, you know. And you've got a couple of articles out now. The first one was very interesting on how, I think that was the first one, on how to get started in the government. Or was that was the second one?
The second one was on small business and how to get started in the marketplace. And the first one that I did for them, Mark, had to deal with the federal pay freeze. You know, it was a topic that's still being discussed now in terms of freezing federal workers' pay and freezing their benefits, maybe taking away some of their benefits. And what I attempted to do in this article is do a crosswalk on why that matters to you if you're a government contractor. The things that happen to the federal employees that you're working with, whether it's an end user or a contracting officer, have a profound impact on your business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we both thoroughly believe that this is a relationship-driven market. And if those people are no longer there, you can't have a relationship with their chair.
If they're no longer there, and also if they're feeling stressed and pinned in, that's going to have a direct impact on whether or not you get your contract modified that day, or whether or not you actually walk away with the purchase order.
Yeah, you know, we almost should bring Mike Causey in for this, but we'll, you know, with pay freeze like that, and right there, HD Supply. Wow, talk! it was the truck that just went by. And aside here, another contractor, Home Depot. odd coincidence. The migratory habits of feds is usually pretty predictable. This throws a major monkey wrench potentially into that. And it won't, I mean, it'll probably impact the acquisition community maybe more.
Oh, I think it'll impact the acquisition community significantly. Just take it a baseline. What have people been saying for the last several years, including myself? We need to increase the acquisition workforce, and there's been nodding conventional wisdom that the acquisition workforce should be increased. Well, now you've got a hiring and possible pay freeze that you're staring at. That momentum to add to the acquisition workforce is going to be perhaps significantly slowed down. I don't know about reversed, but certainly come to an end before we have achieved anything like what anybody had anticipated in terms of having a full fully functioning acquisition workforce. In fact, last week, Shay Assad, the Director of Defense Procurement, said at the Coalition Spring Conference, he's not sure that they're going to be able to fill out all of the roles that they had originally envisioned because of tight budgets. So if you're a contractor and you want to get a purchase order out of somewhere in the Department of Defense, you may have to wait for a while to do that. You're going to have to find the person who you can push through the pipeline, realizing that that person's probably going to have 10 other things that he or she is doing. Similarly, over at GSA, you know, GSA had been hoping to hire some more people. Whether or not they get to do that now is under some question. And so if you're trying to get your contract modified, or if you're trying to get a contract to sell, that's going to be a lengthy process now as well. There's more.
Well, it was lengthy before.
Yeah, right. But you're going to have more
offers. Are we back to like the 90s?
Well, I think in some part we may get back. We may be back in the 90s already. There are certain parts of GSA and the VA, to be fair. It's not just GSA. Mm-hmm. Where it can take 9 months to a year to get a contract awarded, with a year not being at all unusual. And that's from the time you submit your offer. That's too long. Nobody likes that. If you want to sell, you want to get selling as soon as you can. You don't want to wait for a year. And so we have seen now already that there are some significant backlogs. If there are no additional hands that are going to be bought in to help with that, I don't know that the program, that the outlook will get any better in the short term.
Okay, you're familiar with the American Express Open study for small businesses coming into the government market?
A little bit, yes.
Okay, they indicated, and this was a study conducted in 2009, 2010. It was released last year in three parts, but they said that it took roughly 19 and a half months for a company entering the market to win its first business after an investment roughly of $89,000 per calendar year. And it's a dollar investment and a time and material personnel investment.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, talks about things that, Mark, you and I have said for years. If you were going to come into the government marketplace and hang out your shingle on Thursday, don't expect to get your first purchase order on Friday. This is an 18 to 24 month process, and you got to have a little skin in the game. And if you're going to be successful, that's what you've got to do. But and yet we still have significant new companies coming into this market, whether it's through the GSA schedule or whether it is through an individual agency MAC contract. Subcontractors, too. People want to go where the dollars are, even though the federal dollars are being cut relatively. There's still more dollars here than there are other places. But it takes time and it takes patience.
It does indeed. When you say significant companies, I'm not going to ask you for names, but are you aware of companies in the, say, Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 types of companies that are coming in for the first time?
Well, yeah. I've seen some pretty decent-sized companies who maybe were in federal 10 years ago and then got out, who are now coming back because they don't because they kind of have to. There aren't a lot of prospects going out for them commercially. I'll probably have some new managers in here. So, yeah, it's not just the smaller businesses. You're seeing some medium-sized companies come in. I'm getting calls from companies literally in almost every part of the globe that are interested in some aspect of the federal market.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I met with an Irish trade delegation late last year. Ireland's economy is terrible. They're looking, you know, to grow, you know, some business somewhere.
Right.
I'm not sure they liked my message. You know, I'd love to help, but it's going to take a while. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I've had a couple of electronic manufacturers contact me recently. One that's here and not doing great, and one that wants to come in. So it's real, it's viable, and our market is still hot.
Well, that's one of the things that I've been telling people, and you know, the other Washington Business Journal article I've had published so far, Mark, talks about the things that you need to do. It's things we've been talking about. Stay focused. Don't try to be all things to all people. Be realistic. You know, it's great to have enthusiasm, but you also have to understand the process that you're getting into, and you're not going to leapfrog through the process unless you are the very fortunate and rare specimen. Patience is key, but also the other thing that doesn't get talked about a lot but should is you have to be compliant. You know, there are still special rules and regulations that you have to encounter when you're selling to the government. And my mantra there, Mark, is it's not how much money you make, it's how much money you keep. And making sure you've got a good compliance program that you understand when you sign on that bottom line, what you've just told people your company is going to do, is a very important part of successfully selling in this market.
Right, and that's one of the reasons when I'm talking especially to a manufacturer, I say very carefully consider not selling direct.
Right.
Let's use the channel. That's what it's there for. They know the game. They have the relationships. They will walk you through all compliance. They won't adopt you unless you have, you know, the compliance issues there.
Right.
So, all right. Larry, we're going to take our next break. My guest is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. When we come back, we're going to talk about the changes in the small business regulations. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tune in to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, mornings 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a connected world. Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because more than 1,000 Americans develop Alzheimer's every day. At our website, you can learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease.
You don't need dams, waterfalls, or waves to get hydroelectric power anymore. A new technology is tapping energy from even slow-moving streams. Engineers have long known that cylindrical objects in the path of moving water can create strong swirls that often need to be suppressed to prevent damage. But Michael Bernitsis, a University of Michigan engineer, saw things differently.
It dawned on me that we can possibly do exactly the opposite, enhance these kind of destructive phenomena, control them, and harness the energy.
Bernitsis built ladder-like devices attached to electromagnets. When placed in a stream, the rungs both create spinning currents of water and are allowed to move in the turbulence, generating electricity. Then he lined the devices up in a way that mimics schools of fish, which
basically glide between vortices generated by the fish ahead of them.
Bernitsis says such positioning can amplify power generation, even in gently flowing rivers. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Two Navy ships from Virginia are getting credit for stopping a pirate attack on a Philippine-flagged merchant vessel in the Arabian Sea. According to the Pentagon, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise and the guided missile cruiser Leyte Gulf responded to the Falcon Trader 2 after the ship reported pirates in a skiff were attempting to board the vessel. They fired warning shots, and the men were seen jumping from the ship and speeding away in their skiff. I'm J.J. Green.
Multiple times a day, we all listen to the weather forecast. Every day, Airink collects and organizes up to 100,000 real-time automated position and weather reports from aircraft and forwards them to the National Weather Service World Area Forecasting Center, where it's used as input for their predictive weather models. Better forecasts contribute to greater public safety. For information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. A new genetic disease has been identified. It's rare, debilitating, and is the result of an error in one gene.
So the gene was defective, and the gene product was not being made, or it was being made improperly.
therefore it wasn't functioning appropriately.
Dr. William Gall is with the National Human Genome Research Institute. He says that gene product is a protein called CD73.
So if you have a defect in that gene, you're not producing the CD73 protein, and therefore there's calcification that occurs.
Painful calcification occurs in blood vessels below the waist and in joints of the hands and feet. For details, visit www.genome.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find them at allenfederal.com. Larry, couple of changes here. We won't just touch on the small business size standards. Let's take number one, justification and approval for 8A sole source awards.
That's right, Mark. In fact, this was a host of rules that the Small Business Administration had been contemplating for over a year, recently issued some final rules in this arena. And one of the ones that came out and said, we're going to cap for the first time the amount of business you can give to an 8A contractor under a sole source award situation. Previously, there was no cap. Now the cap is $20 million. It's not a hard cap. It's a soft cap, as you alluded to. A contracting officer can still go over that cap, but they have to do a justification to do that. Still, I would guess most 8As, if they got a $20 million task order, would be dancing in the proverbial street.
Pretty happy. Anything in particular that precipitated that one?
Oh, I think, you know, the idea, I think the big precipitator here, Mark, was with Alaska Native Corporations. You know, Alaska Native Corporations had the ability to take government contracts on a sole source basis of any size, and there were a number of reports in GAO and then Senator McCaskill over the last 2 years and her subcommittee talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of sole source contracts going to Alaska Native firms, and turning out that in many of those cases, Alaska Native companies, Alaska Natives themselves, actually ended up getting very little benefit from that.
Right. Okay. Next one, parity among 8A hub zone and service disabled programs.
This basically was a provision in the law that fixed a GAO court case, Court of Federal Claims and GAO both from last year, where the court had read in a protest a favorable standard for hub zones. Hub zones were the way the technical language read in the original act, it read hub zones must be considered first. And
ooh.
Right. And so, you know, suddenly hub zones were now the best socioeconomic designation to have, and only other socioeconomic designations like service disabled, veteran owned, small business, those would come lower in the pecking order. Congress, in its wisdom, changed the wording in the Hub Zone Act, so it's now May, and that puts it on parity with the rest of the socioeconomic programs, which almost everybody believes was the original intent of Congress to begin with.
Okay. Now, this ruling did not impact the new women-owned
program. No, it did not. No.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, the women-owned program is one that was separate and apart from this, and it's been working on its own track. A huge initiative that actually the last administration tried to get in place in terms of expanding the opportunities for women-owned small businesses. Ultimately tabled, the rule that came out recently, Mark, from this administration was significantly broader than the one done in the last administration, i.e. it affects more types of work being done by women-owned small businesses. It classifies more of that, more types of work as being ones in which women-owned businesses are historically underused. So the idea and the central thrust of this rule is to make it easier for women-owned businesses to compete more effectively and with minimal competition in the federal marketplace for those types of contracts.
Okay. But it's not restrictive at all?
Not really restrictive at all, it doesn't place women-owned businesses at the top of the pinnacle. But basically, a lot of people, including myself, kind of felt that women-owned businesses were the last socioeconomic box in the pecking order. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea behind the SBA's recent rulemaking is to bring them up to level with all of the others. We'll see if it does that.
Okay, and that was going to be my next question on that. What do you think the odds are? Because I've had a number of women call and say, you know, window dressing.
Well, I think that there's a certain amount of that. Certainly the intent is to, again, have more types of business be set aside on a limited basis for women-owned businesses. However, my basic look at this marketplace, Mark, when people are looking at socioeconomic programs is what's the flavor of the month? And for a long time, even before the GAO court ruling came out, hub zones had been the flavor of the month, historically underutilized. Everybody likes that, urban areas. And then we had veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and starting their own businesses. From that time till now, certainly the predominant socioeconomic classification to have is service-disabled, veteran-owned small business.
Right.
It's gold, or has been gold anyway, in the VA, but it's also very, very important to have at other federal agencies. I'm not sure that you can change people's views on which socioeconomic class to use merely by regulation.
Yeah, probably not. We have 2 minutes. Small business size standards for service industries. What's the rule here?
Well, the rule here is to update the size classifications, which hadn't been updated in very many years, to kind of reflect reality. I think what's interesting here, Mark, is that some service categories have been changed. So it used to be, you know, 100, now it's 500 employees. You get to be considered small. But in some areas, they've made relatively little change in terms of things like dollar volume of business that you could have and still be considered small. Mm-hmm. Still, the overall intent of these rules on size standards was to update as many of them as they could into the 21st century. Kudos to the SBA for getting this done. It's been tried before and been shot down for various reasons, many of them political. So I, for one, am happy to see the SBA being successful in updating small business size standards and to reflect something closer to reality.
There you go. Larry, it's always a pleasure to have you. final words?
Well, I think moving forward, it's going to be an interesting year. I think a lot of people, Mark, believe that this fiscal year has been shot to pieces because of all the continuing resolutions.
We didn't even touch that.
No, and I think that that's exactly right. I think that this may go down as a lost year in terms of government business. But I also think that we will have, at some point, a CR that carries us through to September 30th, and at least for the last quarter of the fiscal year, something approaching normalcy, albeit with restricted budgets, will be in place.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we had a budget for 12, though.
Yes.
We can hope. Not that we have any influence on that. But again, Larry, thanks for joining me. Again, my guest has been Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find them at allenfederal.com. This is not my day job. Check out the new Government Market Master Program at the School of Management at George Mason University. Go to governmentmarketmaster.com.